Most politicians watch their words carefully, but not Mike Bloomberg. He has always enjoyed privilege and wealth, and told of watching his mother play Scrabble, who with their maid. He bought his way into politics as mayor of New York and trying to buy his way into the presidency. This is the same man who, as New York mayor, sided with Muslims who wanted to build a mosque near Ground Zero after 9/11. But where are Bloomberg's votes going to come from? He has single-handedly eroded any base with elitist comments. As New York Mayor Bloomberg opined that it was good to tax the poor so they could not afford to buy things that might hurt them. This as he was attempting to limit the amount of soft drink consumption for any individual New Yorker. Making the poor poorer might prevent them from buying bigger soft drinks, but it also limits their ability to feed their families or buy the medicines they need. It was a foolish statement by Bloomberg, but one that he meant. New York's stop and frisk policy was warranted because of the high crime rate, and it is true that the great majority of the crime was coming from urban areas. But Bloomberg showed his racist side when he said that all of the crime was there and that all of the police should be assigned to black areas. He urged the police to throw young black men up against the wall and frisk them. In truth, there was a small number of stop-and-frisk victims that were found to be armed or dangerous. Obviously, the most attention needed to be on those areas where the criminals were, and the majority were black. But you can't assume that all black men are criminals and put targets on their back. But Bloomberg didn't stop with condemnation of black America. He weighed in that seniors with life-threatening diseases like cancer are a burden on our country and should be allowed to die. Don't waste money trying to save them. That shows the lack of compassion within Mike Bloomberg. Not only does he support ending the life of seniors with disabilities, but he is also perhaps the most radical voice for abortion in America. Nobody in America is a stronger advocate for the killing fields of Planned Parenthood than Michael Bloomberg. And it doesn't stop there. Bloomberg is an opponent of the Second Amendment, allowing Americans to keep and bear arms. With his billions of dollars, Bloomberg can afford armed security, and he has no need to keep or bear arms. The rest of us have seen what happens in countries like North Korea, Cuba, Russia, China, and Venezuela, among others, when the public is disarmed. With no way to protect themselves, they are forced to give up their freedom and liberty, and in many cases, to give up their lives. Nowhere is Bloomberg's elitist attitude more evident than when he denigrated farmers. Bloomberg voiced his opinion that farmers lack intellect. It was easy to farm, said Bloomberg. You just plant some seed, put water on it, and watch it grow. Former President Dwight Eisenhower spoke decades ago about pontificators like Michael Bloomberg when he said that it was easy to denigrate farmers when your plow is a pencil and your crops far, far away. These are just a few of the inane statements spewing from the mouth of a man whose accomplishments are based on how much he was willing to spend on them. The truth is that Michael Bloomberg is only gaining increased ratings in his pursuit to buy the presidency because he believes he can buy it and is willing to spend billions to do it, compounded by the fact that Democrats have a weaker field of candidates than a crop of kudzu. The liberal mainstream media is reluctant to reveal Bloomberg's far-left beliefs, because they can't see another Democrat who they think can beat Trump in November, so they hedge their bets. Is America for sale? Bloomberg believes it is. Bernie Sanders believes America is ready for socialism. The answer to both must come from a heavy turnout of patriotic Americans in November. Every single vote is important. Don't let your opportunity to save this country be wasted. In my commentary today, I give credit to Phil Elmore of WND and Amanda Alvarez of Conservative Daily News for their research and comments, which I incorporate with my own. There was another demonstration recently protesting the minimum wage in North Carolina. TV cameras are always eager to cover these events, even when there's just a handful of disgruntled people in attendance. The minimum wage in North Carolina currently is $7.25 an hour. The argument from the protesters is that they can't live on $7.25 an hour. They want it more than doubled to $15 an hour overnight. And when it gets to that point, the cry will then be for $20 an hour. I understand the difficulty of living on $7.25 an hour. I've lived on less. But minimum wage was not meant to be an hourly wage for life. It's a starting point and not meant to be an ending point. Believers have little or no experience when they begin, and they have to gain experience in order to earn a bigger salary. Those who have been on the job longer have to question why their skills are meriting minimum wages. If you applied yourself and have the skills that merit higher pay, and you aren't getting it, move on to where your abilities are appreciated. I've been on minimum wage. Coming out of the Navy, I worked at Burlington Mills as a virtual gopher and earned minimum wage. I moved on to Hackney Body Works, where I cut styrofoam for use in refrigerated trucks. After 3 months there, I got a raise. 3 cents an hour. Frankly, that's what people with my skill level were making. I never thought about getting the gang together and demanding a higher wage. I was glad to have a job with any salary, including minimum wage, but I wasn't content to remain at that level. You cannot depend on your employer to pay you what you decide you need to live on. You have to come in early and leave late. Don't just go through the routine every day so that 10 years later you have 1 year's experience 10 times. Try spending some time in the library instead of days filled with video games. If the job you're in does not have an opportunity for advancement, find a job that does. Of course it's not easy. Nothing valuable in life is easy. Most, if not all of us, have encountered employees in a business who are simply going through the motions and watching the clock. They are not interested in extra effort to improve their skills. They don't pay attention to other positions in the company and what they might need to do to get to one of those higher positions. Recently, a friend of mine told of going into Food Lion and striking up a conversation with a checkout clerk. He told her how Food Lion got its name. When they expanded, they found that their name at the time, Food Town, was already taken in new markets. And so they became Food Lion. The clerk yawned and told him that she wasn't interested in that. Her job was just to check out grocery buyers. Among the crowds of minimum wage protesters are many just like that. Life is tough. But this is the greatest country in the history of the world. Anything is possible for those who are willing to step up to the challenges. I've lived days when I had to heat a can of corned beef hash under running hot water to survive. But it made me stronger. Due to a burning desire for self-education and a better skill set so I can do better in my job, I can now write checks for large sums of money and not fear the sheriff knocking on my door. I've been privileged to visit every state in the Union and 82 foreign countries. How could that happen for a rural North Carolina farm boy who began life in poverty and squandered learning opportunities all through high school? It came down to growing up and the determination to take the opportunities my country was offering and go after them. Today, I watch college snowflakes rail against their own country. It is true that America is not perfect. No country or individual is perfect. But in America, we root out imperfection and we change it. Where else would these dissidents prefer to live? If there is a better country, what stops them from moving there? Why does the rest of the world yearn to be in America? Why do they risk their lives just to get here? Many arriving with no resources, and yet they prosper here because they're proud to be here. In my world travels, I've listened to so many people tell me how fortunate I am to be an American. I've encountered so many legal immigrants here in America who question why Americans can't see that they are the envy of the world. These immigrants come from oppressive regimes and countries whose leaders siphon off resources for themselves and leave their people in extreme poverty. Here they encounter dissidents who have never been subjected to that cruel life. Over the past few years, I've seen a large amount of hate and anger towards the United States of America and throughout the American people. Many of those people pledged to move to Canada and never did if Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton in 2016. Across our nation, Americans continuously degrade the integrity and greatness of this country. But no matter where your party lines are drawn, here are 10 reasons that the United States is the best country you could possibly live in. First would be freedom of religion, speech, press, peaceful assembly, and petition. The United States is unique in how it grants the ability of its citizens to practice any religion, say anything, or protest without any legal ramifications. Some countries have implemented free speech laws where certain phrases and offensive statements, real or perceived, can get you sent to jail. Here in America, we are still free but under fire from liberal radicals who seek to limit free speech throughout political correctness and to attack Christianity. Thankfully, there are more average, ordinary Americans who still value those principles than the radicals among us. Next, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, along with a well-regulated militia. While radical leftists seek to end the Second Amendment, America has guaranteed its citizens the ability to defend themselves against others and even against a tyrannical government. Other countries have entire gun bans, leaving their citizens completely reliant on the police and the government to save them in times of crisis. We need only look at Venezuela today to see that effect. First, they disarmed their citizens and then placed them under a dictatorship that has destroyed the country. Venezuelans are reduced to eating snakes, rats, and zoo animals for survival. They walk for days to the border to seek life-saving medicines. While they have the will to resist, they do not have the means to do so. In an effort to attack the Second Amendment, liberals ask why we need a gun with 30 rounds of ammunition to hunt deer. We don't. We need that 30 rounds to protect ourselves against a rogue government, should it develop here, as it has done in several countries like China, Russia, North Korea, and Cuba. Then we have the right that no soldier shall in any time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in times of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. This particular right was very time-specific. When the Constitution was written during the Revolutionary War, soldiers took shelter in citizens' homes, relying on them for food and a place to sleep. The British military also was guilty of this, and so we implemented it into our Constitution in order to make sure that this would never happen again. The fourth right is the right to privacy against unreasonable searches and seizures. Our right to privacy and keeping the government out of our lives is most vital. This right ensures that without probable cause, the government or police cannot search our homes, our cars, or any personal belongings. Next is the right to be silent in a court of law, the ability to not testify against oneself, the right to not be the subject of the same offense or trial twice, to not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall have private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Number six, the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime was committed, to be informed of the nature and cause and confronted with the witnesses against him, the right to a lawyer if one cannot afford one. Next, in common law, where value exceeds $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise examined in any court of the United States. Next, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. This right protects from being mistreated in holding cells, jails, or imprisonment, or while in police custody. There are also rights other than the rights listed in the Constitution that should not be denied to the people. That allows us to have more power over the government, and it's an intricate part of our democratic republic. And finally, the powers not delegated to the United States by Constitution are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. This vital right takes away power from the federal government. Liberals want government's nose into our personal lives, but in fact, our Constitution states that it is up to the states to make up any other program or law not given to the federal government in the Constitution. Many countries around the globe do not protect these rights for its citizens. They are subject to unfair elections, inability of free speech or protection of themselves, and are denied basic human rights that many Americans take for granted. I cringe when I see our flag being burned or abused by dissidents who have never lived without the rights that have been granted to them here. They have no frame of reference, and many have been thoroughly indoctrinated by leftist college professors who consider themselves educated beyond mere intelligence. These socialists enjoy tenure and the ability to influence young minds. As liberals, they hate facts. The problem is that liberals, leftists, and collectivists in every stripe never tire of using and abusing what they call science as a weapon of propaganda. The narrative goes like this. Liberals are good. They're good-hearted, open-minded, tolerant people who believe in the scientific method and who reject superstitions of creationism. They accept the so-called settled science of man because global warming and, coincidentally, the crippling socialist economic regulations that always seem to be the solution to this problem are there. They're also constitutional scholars and experts on everything, from the technology of the Internet to the technology of firearms. Much to their chagrin, however, those benighted, practically retarded, racist, reactionary Neanderthals who insist on voting for conservatives refuse to be persuaded by liberal brilliance, which of course only reinforces in the liberal mind how stupid those knuckle-dragging conservative types are. The narrative is then repeated ad nauseum in our popular culture. Democrats, smart. Republicans, stupid. Democrats love science. Republicans hate science. Democrats want clean air and water. Republicans want dirty air and dirty water. Atheism is clever, superstitious. Religion is foolish. Those lessons are pumped into our government classrooms, for that is where public schools are. Government indoctrination camps, where reading and math have been supplanted by cultural indoctrination to left-wing ideology. Those lessons are repeated in our television programs and recited dutifully by leftists disguised as news anchors. There is no technology that liberals will not pervert to their cause, and yet they are strangely deaf and dumb to science when technology might actually be used to help Americans. Leftists refuse to look at the media accounts of Muslim radicals when vetting them for immigration purposes. Yet programs like Operation Vigilante Eagle monitor the social media posts of American veterans. The Department of Homeland Security and the National Security Agency are monitoring the calls and texts of virtually all Americans, yet somehow they cannot be bothered to intercept the ominous messages of people like the radical Muslim terrorists. And in the aftermath of jihadist rampages, Democrats are quick to blame everyone who did not do it, with some leftists going so far as to claim that the NRA is more dangerous than terrorist murderers. That's right. To Democrats, it's not terrorists who are the enemies of America. It is not foreign nations hostile to our country. It is not the thousands of Muslim refugees who come to the United States determined to colonize this nation and unmake its liberties in the name of Sharia law. No, to Democrats, the real enemies are their fellow Americans. To Democrats, the true enemy is any individual who dares to deny what leftists accept as truth. Never doubt, either, that the choice of the word denier, as in climate change denier, was anything except deliberate. Democrat elites seek to smear all who disagree with them as no better than Holocaust deniers. This is why the favorite accusation of all liberal sheep is the bleat, racist. We have reached the point where simply holding conservative or even libertarian views is to Democrats racist hatred. They now equate the refusal to affirm their policies with an attack on their persons, and this includes their failure to be persuaded by their misinterpretation of what they call science. Never was this more apparent than in the insulting assertion that climate change is both responsible for Muslim terrorism throughout the world and somehow a greater threat. Islamists are sawing the heads off of innocent people, racing cars and trucks into crowds of innocent people. And we're supposed to be on the lookout for fractional degrees of global temperature increase? Muslim immigrants to this nation are slaughtering the co-workers who throw them a baby shower, and we're supposed to believe it's our fault because our factories emit too much carbon. Any rational person knows that the distant, eventual threat of climate change, once called global warming, but since renamed because the realities of weather made the term inconvenient for liberal propagandists, pales in comparison to the immediate threat of Muslim mass murder. Yet, Democrats continue to double down on this so-called science, proclaiming that anyone who disbelieves is a foolish heretic. Never have so many who were so stupid believed that they were so smart. Liberals are not experts in science. They can't even acknowledge self-evident realities. They pretend to be scientists while ignoring scientific facts. They also pretend to be constitutional scholars while ignoring, redefining, and perverting the Constitution. Liberals hate facts. Period. If we want to make America great again and keep America great again, we need to embrace the things that made us great in the first place. Unfortunately, the left tends to hate most of those things. In fact, many leftists actually tell us that America was never great. These so-called progressives want our nation to be fundamentally transformed into an entirely different place than our forefathers intended. And they use big government as a tool to conduct that transformation. The Socialist Democrats are focused on only two things, power and money. As long as Democrats win, nothing else matters. I thank you for listening to my commentary today. I remind you again that you can reach me by email at tom@tomjoyner.net. That's Joyner with a Y. tom@tomjoyner.net. If you have some subject that you'd like me to research and report on, I'll be glad to do it. My purpose each week is to give you truth and information. Somebody's got to do it. You're not going to get it from today's liberal mainstream media. Thank you again for listening. I'll be back again next week. God willing, same time and same station.